Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit hamnation.ting.com. That's hamnation.ting.com. And by lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. Try it free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/hamnation. That's lynda.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 115, September 18th, 2013, a tribute to Wayne Green, W2NSD. Good evening, everybody. This is Bob Heil, K9EID, coming to you from the Ozarks tonight. And we have a very special show tonight. We're going to do a tribute later on to Wayne Green. He passed away this week. And for those that you have been new to ham radio, you really missed an icon. And we'll talk about that later because every one of us have stories about Wayne. But before we do that, we've got George is standing by with his soldering iron. And Don Wilbanks is here. But we're going to go down first to Costa Mesa and speak with Gordo. Gordon West, how are you today? You okay?
Oh, we're just fine. We're standing by with our surfboard waiting for warmer water. Thanks to Kevin, KC7 Fox Papa Fox. He took his little AM radio last week after 2 weeks ago, DF hunting of noise. And he finally found the local power pole. That was his problem. So he's got the power company getting that solved. So glad our show 2 weeks ago paid off. And we just got news that AES is going to have a great sale from their repair department. So if you're up in the Milwaukee area, swing by the store in that they're closing down, I guess, the repair department, just the repair department, and they've got some good deals on test equipment as well as boneyard radios. This weekend, the 10 gigahertz contest. So when you see those dish antennas, you know they're playing 10 gigs for part two of the ARRL contest. And Pacificon, that's where we'll be in about 3 weeks, October 11, 12, and 13 in the Bay Area. See you there. And Bob, you and I and George will be doing the Midwest Convention November 8, 9, and 10. Back to you, Bob.
Yeah, the Midwest Convention is going to be great. We'll be talking more about it. It's going to be fabulous. We're going to do a live audience in a gorgeous theater, Ham Nation. So if any of you guys and gals want to have a fun weekend, it's a mini Dayton. They have all of the majors there. We'll talk about it more. We have a very important thing to talk about, though. We have our wonderful co-host coming in to tell us about what's going on in Colorado. Amanda, we all love you. We've missed you. Thanks for being here. And how are you and Jeff doing? Are you doing okay?
Jeff and I are doing really well. Thank you for asking. And unfortunately, a lot of what I would call our ham radio family up north is not doing so well. Obviously, everybody knows, unless you've been under a rock for the last week, that we've been getting inundated with a lot of water. And let's say thank you to Aries up north for handling so much health and welfare traffic and saving so many lives. You guys, I just want to say, be prepared. You don't think it's coming to you, but it does. So I did include a few pictures here tonight. We'll go through a little slideshow. Now, this is what happened to us here in Canyon City. We got about 4.5 inches of rain in about 24 to 48 hours. Now, this is my friend Dennis's house. The house you see in the background there, very hidden, is his place. This is his whole front yard. Lots of water. It's now a sinkhole. Now. It's really sad. It's a about 4 feet deep with nothing. He has no idea where I went. So he decided to, he's a positive guy, and he decided to try out his fly fishing skills, work on them a little bit. Isn't that cute? I mean, he can only find the positive in it. That's really nice. That's Dennis, by the way, you guys, WB0WDF. And all of us ham people went over there with our pumps to suck out his basement that had about 3 foot of water in it. So that was kind of a bummer. Now, this is before the flooding. This is a satellite picture. And if you go to the next picture, you can see all of the blue that comes in. Oh, my gosh. It's just, wow. It's unbelievable how much water up north got around Boulder and Greeley, Longmont, Fort Collins, and parts of Denver. All of I-25, obviously, up there. These are some of the rain totals, and I know it's a really shoddy picture, you guys. I'm sorry about that. But if you see that 21.13 in the big red letters down there.
Wow.
That is part of Boulder. That's what they got in 7 days. Now, Boulder gets, that's probably about what they get in about 2 years' time. It's twice as what they get in precipitation in 1 year. It's just unbelievable, these rain totals. Other places, 18, 14 inches. It's been really devastating to them. It's They told us that this kind of rain was coming, and all of us shunned it, saying, no way. We're not getting that kind of rain. It's not possible. So we threw this in there, you guys, just a little bit of fun. This is what we look like now, of course. Here we had the fires, now the floods. So, and it seems like I'm only on here when we have some kind of disaster. So I'm asking you guys in the chat room, will you come up with a new nickname for me? Give it to me. Just hand it over to me. You know, something like Disastrous Debbie something. So you guys, I'll leave it up to you, and we'll decide on it. That will be my new nickname here for Ham Nation. Anyhow, a couple other things. Just make sure you guys are prepared. Practice your local nets. Check in. Make sure you know how to hit those frequencies and those repeaters, because you never, ever know when you're going to need them. Keep those frequencies on you. Keep them in a wallet card. It doesn't matter. It could save your life one of these days. And one other thing, help when you can, but make sure you and your family are going to be safe first. And one last thing, this is a hard one for me because I have looked at other states that have gone through disasters. Let's say Florida and their hurricanes, Oklahoma and their tornadoes. I've always said, why did these people keep living in these places if they're going to face this kind of destruction? And I promise you guys, I am never, ever, ever going to say that again. Because I love my home, I love Colorado, and nothing is ever going to make us move from here. So thanks to everybody for all of your support. And of course, Gordo is facing all of those fires. I don't know if you've gotten any of the smoke from them, but also, just as devastating this summer. It's just been a real rough summer for the United States in general. So thanks, everyone, for your emails and everything. Love you guys, and I'll send it back to you, Bob.
Actually, we've lost Bob on Skype. I'm trying to get him back at the moment.
Well, Cheryl, we are so happy that both of you are okay, and we just wish the very, very best to all of those folks in the Boulder area. And thank you so much. Amanda. Thank you so much, Amanda, for all of the great reporting that you did and the great photos. And Amanda, one more time, what would you like the chat room to send you?
Why don't you give me my disaster nickname? That's what I'm looking for.
All right. Well, I can only think of it's always something, Amanda. All right.
That's a good one,
thanks,
Gordo.
Thanks, Amanda. And let's see. Who has got it next in that? Let's go to, I believe, I think it's George. Is that right, Brian? Is George up next? And if not, I'll go ahead and take it from here.
You got it right, Gordo. We're going to George.
Hey, Gordo. And I heard you say you're waiting on warmer water to go surfing. Well, bring your surfboard on here to Mississippi. The water is plenty warm. Just bring the waves with you.
Will do, George.
Everyone ought to keep in mind, if you're a D-Star operator, this weekend is the D-Star QSO party. It's running September the 20th, Friday, through the 22nd, Sunday. And it's going to be a big time. ICOM's got some special gifts they're giving away this year. It's some gold-plated pins. They're I can't read it here on the screen, but it's a traditional Japanese style of pen. They look really nice. So four of those are going to be given away during the D-Star QSO party. So check that out this weekend. And, you know, SWR is a topic that, you know, all us hams need to be familiar with. And this week I'm going to do a little introduction on the topic. Now, we're not going to get real heavy into it and pull out the Smith charts and everything. But just to kind of give you an idea of what SWR is, let's take a look at this week's episode of Smoke and Solder. This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to talk about VSWR. Every ham needs to understand SWR in order to maximize their transmission system. When a transmitter is connected to an antenna by a feed line, the impedance of the antenna and feed line must match exactly for maximum energy transfer from the feed line to the antenna to be possible. The impedance of the antenna varies based on many factors, including the antenna's natural resonance at the frequency being transmitted, the antenna's height above ground, and the size of the conductors used to build the antenna. When an antenna and feed line do not have matching impedances, some of the electrical energy cannot be transferred from the feed line to the antenna. Energy not transferred to the antenna is reflected back toward the transmitter. It's the interaction of these reflected waves with forward waves that causes standing wave patterns. Reflected power has three main implications in radio transmitters. The RF energy losses increase, there's distortion on the transmitter due to the reflected power from the load, and damage to the transmitter can occur. This animation shows two traveling waves. The blue wave is traveling to the right, and the red wave is traveling to the left. Here, both waves have the same amplitude, the same frequency, and the same wavelength. The black signal represents the energy of these two waves combined. As these waves pass through each other and add together, they create a standing wave. That's a pattern which neither moves left or right, but simply oscillates up and down as a function of time. The amplitude of this standing wave is twice that of the individual waves when the two waves are in phase so that the peaks and valleys line up. The amplitude of the standing wave is zero when the two waves are completely opposite in phase so that the peaks of one wave line up with the valleys of the other. The two waves' amplitude then cancel each other out. A great way to demonstrate standing waves is shown in the 1959 Bell Telephone Laboratories film with Dr. John Shive. Using a mechanical wave machine, Dr. Shive shows a visual representation of what standing waves look like.
This time you see the wave is reflected upside down. The reflection is still total as it was before, but the wave is inverted upon reflection.
I highly recommend you check out this film at the ATT archives. The most common method of measuring SWR is with a SWR meter. Different meters are created for different frequency bands. The one on the left here is a CB SWR and watt meter. Not really suitable for ham use, except around the 10-meter band. The one on the right is a VHF-UHF watt meter. That's good for 2 meters and 440. This is an HF watt meter. Now, this particular one has two pointers on a single meter face. There's one for forward power, and it'll show you the number of watts for forward power. And then the other one will show you how many watts are being reflected. The point where those two meters cross each other and intersect with a red line here will give you the SWR value, so you don't have to calculate it out. When I apply power here, you'll see the forward power is just a little over 70, maybe 72 watts. The reflected power is just a hair over 2 watts. The point where the two cross here near a red line is a little lower, just a little over 1.4 to 1 SWR. If it was exactly on that line right there, it would be 1.5. Now there's a couple of buttons on this meter. We've got a dial light. We've also got a range selector here that allows us to select between 300 watts or 3000 watt scale. There's also a peak and average reading here. When we've got it on average and we modulate the transmitter, we'll see that the meter responds pretty quick to our modulation. If I put it on peak, then that gives me the peak value. There are circuits inside that help determine the true peak value of the signal and also dampen the meter so that it decays slower and you can see the peak easier. This particular meter is a true peak reading meter, which means it has active circuitry inside of it to help get a more accurate reading of the peak signal. There's active electronics in here, so this meter has to have power to work. There are other meters that look the same that are generally built in to antenna tuners or standalone. They have the same switches here and essentially the same ranges. However, they don't give the same readings because there's not the active circuitry in there to give you as accurate a reading. And then probably the premium standard is the bird meters, which are kind of costly, and not a lot of amateurs have those, but you see them for sale everywhere, but the price has really risen on those in recent years. A number of radios, like my IC7700 here, have meters built into them. Most radios have that. And generally there's a meter selector switch where you can select what parameter you want to watch. Right now it's set on SWR. And we can see that I've got very low SWR here. I can switch through it and look at the ALC, the compressor, the voltage of the output stage, the current of it, as well as the power out. There's a lot more that can be said about SWR, and we'll take a look at that in the next episode. Yeah, we'll talk a little more about SWR and some other ways to measure it, and may take 2 more weeks to do that. I don't really know yet. I haven't got it all edited, but there's several other ways that you can do it. I just want to mention our contest here. Right now, ICOM is giving away an IC7100. That's the new HF, VHF, UHF D-Star mobile rig. Also, we're giving away a diamond antenna, a screwdriver, and a VHF, UHF antenna. And Turbo Tuner 2 from Gigaparts that will really round that combination out. You'll have the ultimate mobile rig. If you want details on that, then go over and check out amateurlogic.tv and find out more about that nice ICOM contest going on. But right now in our weekly contest, I've got a winner here. My question last week is, what is the maximum transmitting power an amateur station can use on 10.140 megahertz? The answer was A, 200 watts PEP output, B, 1,000, C, 1,500, or D, 2,000. And we had a winner, that's Jeffrey, K8JTK, and he said the answer is 200 watts PEP. So congratulations, Jeffrey. You've won the MFJ dual 24-hour clock for your shack. And for next week, we've got a really nice prize here. If I can reach it. This is the 2013 ARRL Handbook, the hardbound edition. And this is coming from Frank and our friends over at cheapham.com. If you'd like to win this, and every ham needs at least one or two ARRL handbooks on their desk. I've got four, I think. But if you'd like to win that, then answer this. What does VSWR stand for? If you know the answer, send me an email to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. And right now, let's go to Don Wilbanks for a little information on Ting.
Hey, George, how you doing? Good to see you. Yeah, we want to talk about a sponsor to Ham Nation. It is Ting. What is Ting? Well, Ting is a mobile phone service. It is a no BS service, as they call themselves. Ting is what's called an MVNO. That is a reseller of the Sprint network. There are no contracts, no early termination fees, no bundling or ride-along service. You can choose from as little or as much as you want, to various service levels for your voice minutes, your text messages, your megabytes of data. It's all billed separately. It's roll your own, which is kind of cool. And because of that, there's no overage charges or penalties. If you use a little more than you thought you might, well, you just pay for the extra. No add-on charges either. Your voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding, other measures. It's all part of the service. No add-ons. No weird line items on your bill either. They charge you for what you use, plus whatever taxes that they are legally required to collect. There's no hidden charges, recovery fees, or other BS. Also, it's unlimited devices on one plan. Have as many. If you want 4,712 devices, then buy them. Have 4,712 devices on your plan. Well, maybe not that many, but have as many as you want or need on your plan. You share the pooled minutes, your messages, and your megabytes. Each device on a plan just costs a flat $6 a month. Also, there's a really cool online account control panel. You take complete control of your account, your usage, your bills. It's all right there. And no on-hold customer support. When you call 1-855-TING-FTW anytime between 8 and 8, you're going to find a real person. They will pick up the phone. And the online support is beyond excellent. Help.ting.com has active customer forums. There's a complete and powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials, video startup guides, and a lot more. Here's how Ting works. You buy your mobile device from Ting. You'll receive in 2 to 5 business days. You activate your device with Ting. You have the option to select a new phone number, or you can port your existing one. Ting will break out your rates by minutes, text messages, and megabytes, so they will bill you at the end of the month for what you've used, okay? That's the neat thing about it. Now, here's what you do. You go to Ting. Visit Ting at hamnation.ting.com. Hamnation.ting.com. You'll save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. They have a savings calculator. You can figure out exactly how much you or your company can save. And your Ham Nation viewers, that's you people out there. Yes, you. We love you so much. Because we do, we're going to give you $25 off your first Ting device when you sign up. Hamnation.ting.com. Sign up and be happy. And we thank them so much for their support of Ham Nation. Now let's go back to Costa Mesa and see what... Gordon has got up his sleeve. You got some short shots, huh, Chief?
We do. Thanks, Don. And, you know, last week we talked about the distress radio system by the Coast Guard and had a lot of emails about what does it take to get involved in making some money in commercial electronics. So let's take a quick look and see what's out there. First of all, when we talk about working commercial marine electronics or commercial aviation, it requires the commercial license. And Brian will soon bring that up. So if you're going to work on two-way radios aboard a boat, you are required to have a commercial general radio telephone license. If you're going to adjust that radio, you need to be licensed, not just a ham license, but the commercial license. Avionics, many of you don't live next to the water, but you live close to an airport. And if you're servicing avionics, you need, if it's two-way radio or transponders or any of the radars in the aircraft, you need a commercial radio telephone license. Now, that commercial radio telephone license is also required if you're a skipper or are a deckhand aboard a boat carrying 6 or more passengers for hire. They require just element one, which is called the Marine Radio Operator's Permit. The first class is no more, neither is the second class or the first class or the third class. They've combined the first and second into what is now called the General Radio Operator's License. And for the third class, that is now called the Marine Radio Operator's Permit. The MROP, as you see here on the chart, the MP requires passing just a single test, 24 questions. You can knock it out in about 3 to 5 days of study. But the GROL, that's the one that requires both element one and element three commercial, not to be confused with other ham elements. These are commercial elements, and it's a 100-question test. Now, if you have the extra class license, it won't give you any credit, but it gives you plenty a background of what's going to be on the test. In fact, more than half of the commercial GROL element 3 examination questions are identical to the extra class test. Look at this, side by side pages, the exact same numerical questions, even the same A, B, C, D order. Wow. So if you've got the extra, you are more than almost prepared to take the commercial GROL written exam. So if you got extra, be thinking about working on marine radios. These are VHF radio telephones. And a new rule going into effect end of the year, when you do vessel inspections, which you can do as a GROL operator, you got to make sure that they've got a digital ID number called an MMSI. And if they don't, you can spend an extra half hour on board making sure that This number is input on both their VHF as well as their sideband. Even small boats like this may be required to carry a two-way radio, and that may require you to do some inspection or at least servicing with a commercial license. Yeah, everybody out there on the water needs to have this digital selective calling that's coming into effect end of this year. And even those big, tall ships that carry scouts out on the harbor, they are required also to be inspected, and the inspector can be you, the ham operator, possessing the GROL license. And that's a lifetime license, by the way. And you're going to be looking to see whether or not that VHF radio meets the FCC Part 80 rules. And for those vessels that take passengers for hire, like sport fishers, they, too, have to have, as a minimum, the marine radio operator that's in charge of that radio installation. And it's all covered under Part 80 of the rules. Not the ham rules, but Part 80. And this is the permit that you'll be inspecting for if you decide to become and make some money as a boat or an aircraft inspector. And you take this little work form down there, you fill it out, and you make sure that all of the gear on board is working. And you've already got your test gear, an SWR analyzer, device, frequency counter, voltmeter. You've probably got most of what you would need to do your GROL vessel inspection as part of your ham radio equipment. We go down to the boat, and we make sure that the power output is at least 20 watts out of their VHF radios. Make sure that they've got a visual indication that the radio is transmitting. And we use a modulation meter. What I do is I use the MFJ. I've tweaked it slightly to cover the 156 rather than 146 band. The modification is easy. And you go, hello, in the microphone. And we do it on a public correspondence channel, and we double check that the mic cord is okay. Ooh, look at this mic cord. Well, we did not pass this particular vessel. So this is what we're looking for. Now, we also check for the antenna circuit. We undo the PL259, make sure that with an antenna analyzer that we have low SWR. We look at the antenna aboard the boat or aboard the aircraft, make sure that those wires are okay. And a lot of your equipment that you may have now is perfectly suitable as a GROL licensee to do these inspections aboard these vessels carrying six passengers or more. And sometimes you got to climb around and look at all the stuff that we see up there on this big super yacht. And, of course, AIS, Automatic Identification System, we're checking that out as well. We're making sure no T-connectors like we see in this basket case. And here's one. The commercial vessel had a hard time calling the Coast Guard. It's no wonder they were sharing their antenna with their AM/FM stereo. I can't do that. That's a real kludge job at its best. Single sideband used to be 2 to 3 megahertz. Now it is 2 megahertz to 26 megahertz. And for those vessels going more than 100 miles out, they're required to carry single sideband. Now they have to have the DSC capability for distress calling. And your job as a GROL licensee is to look over the tuner, make sure the wire is okay. I always tug on the antenna wire out of the tuner. Whoa, that one just pulled right out. So we found that bad connection. Sometimes we look inside the tuner to make sure that that wire is not pulled off the circuit board. But as an inspector, you're looking at everything, including the seawater ground. This is called the Dynaplate, a seawater grounding block. And here is a Dynaplate that is pretty well beyond its expected lifespan. That one is ugly. We use a Fluke test meter. You can use any kind, but just make sure it's a good quality one for accurate voltage checks. You're looking for how much voltage is present when you're keying the transmitter for 10 minutes. You're double-checking the battery, and you're making money on the clock as you're doing this. Remember, this is not ham radio. This is commercial radio. Double-checking the instrument panel, looking at voltage and current. Oh, look at this. Absolutely an ugly condition here where the black DC line has parted, and now they're pulling half of their, or actually pulling all of their current out of the ground side of the circuit. Not good for cathodic corrosion protection. And if that vessel is more than 3 miles offshore, you're looking to make sure that it's got the right selection of EPIRBs on board. You're checking that EPIRB out. And if they've got radar, And you need to do service, you may need the additional radar endorsement, which is element 8. Well, how do I study for all this? Well, it's in one nice, neat book. The book is not horribly expensive. I know the writer of the book, and he's a pretty good guy, and he makes learning fun. And to learn more about it, go to w5yi.org and look at the book and get element 1, which is the Marine Radio Operator's Permit, and element 3, which is the GROL. And when you study the 100 questions on your test out of a pool of about 800 questions, you're going to go, if you have the extra, wow, these look very familiar. Well, they are. They're straight out of the ham radio extra class pool. So I hope all of you will get involved in marine electronics or aviation electronics. Earn that element 1 and element 3 commercial. Many municipalities are only hiring those that hold the commercial general radio telephone permit. Get the book, start studying, and let me know if you have any questions. Okay, let's go to Bob, see if he's back again, because Bob's got some exciting news for you. Gordo clear. Bob?
Yeah, Skype dropped out at Petaluma. For all you chat room dudes, no, it wasn't here. It was in Petaluma. Weird, their Skype dropped. Anyway, we're back. Well, this has been a bad week for ham radio in my estimation, because we lost a really good friend in Wayne Green. And I know a lot of you probably don't know who Wayne Green is, but he was, to me, a hero in amateur radio for decades. He started 73 Magazine. This is one of the magazines that I cherish because it has many of all the old receivers. And, of course, being an old collector freak, you could go in here and find each one of the receiver. There's pages of them. But what I really liked about 73 Magazine were things like this. Now, this is 1963, everybody. Here is how you could build a portable 6 and 2 meter radio transceiver and the complete schematic. He was just absolutely the best at making things so simple. And I really enjoyed his friendship. We did several shows together. One was the Arch March in St. Louis. Some of you might have been there. He was a real ramrod to make that happen. And he was known for his wonderful that's a bad word in some people's respect, but to me, they were wonderful editorials. Some of them went, hey, what do you think? They were 8 or 9 pages, weren't they, Gordo?
They were, and boy, you had to read every word.
He talked about everything. He talked about life. He talked about radio. He talked about death. He talked about fun. He talked about sad. It was absolutely wonderful. He was a great guy. And you have some fond memories of Wayne, I'm sure, Gordo.
Yep. I wrote for him for about 5 years doing maritime mobile and aviation and land mobile radio articles. What a great guy. He was sharp technically, but his tongue was even sharper when he put it into words. He gave the league sometimes a little bit of harassment, but you know, we all need to get a good kick in the pants, and he was there to deliver it.
He was the guy. He was. And we've got a really nice tribute coming up here. Don's going to do the news line. And Bill Pasternak was a dear friend of Wayne's. And he has a wonderful tribute that Dale will air for us in a little bit. I just wanted to personally say how much I'm going to miss Wayne. And he also, not only did he do the ham radio things, I was talking a while ago on 40 meters to Dan, K1DV. Dan knew him personally. He lived there, and he's now down in Tennessee. But he reminded me that Wayne started the computer magazines, Byte, AD Micro. He had an Apple-based magazine. He had Killabod. He also had a wonderful software company. And remember this, Gordo? He was selling the first software, and they were on cassette tapes. You remember those days?
I do. He was long before the competition ever decided to get going.
Yeah, and he did all that. He had software stores all over England and New England and places like that. But he told me one thing in closing. This kind of puts his popularity and his wonderful persona in place. He told me one time, he said, "No, Bob, I got a letter one time, and it had somebody had cut my picture out of one of the editorials." And he said, they had my picture on an envelope, and it had Peterborough, New Hampshire. That's all it had. And they delivered it to me. How's that for being famous? Wow. How's that? Don, did you know Wayne? You probably knew him through his writing. Did you know him?
I knew him through his writing, yeah. But no, I never had the privilege to meet the man. But I did read 73 magazine when I was younger, back before I really... Well, I was interested in ham radio. You know, I got interested when I was a kid, fooling around with CB radio and some of the other hams that we had around in the mid-70s. And I would occasionally go to the magazine store, and I would pick up a QST, or I would pick up a CQ, or I would pick up a 73, and I would look at them and think, one of these days I'm going to get into this wild hobby. And now I am, and we've lost a true character in the hobby. That's for sure. We'll have more information on Wayne Green coming up. But first, let's get into the news of the week with Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1883, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 18th, 2013. California continues to burn. A wildfire in Contra Costa County that started September 8th forced the evacuation of at least 100 homes. It also took a cluster of repeaters, primarily serving the San Francisco Bay Area, off the air. Here's Skeeter Nash in 5ASH.
Four of the repeaters are owned by the Mount Diablo Amateur Radio Club. They were the lucky ones because all they lost was power to their systems. Jim Siemens, AF6PU, is a spokesman for the club.
MDARC had three ATV amateur television repeaters on 440, 900 megahertz, 1.2 gigahertz, and we had an ATRS digipeater on 144390. There are other buildings up on the hill which are being fed by generators. The owner of the site is going to string additional power lines to feed our container. And so we might be on the air hopefully as soon as the end of this weekend here, this coming Sunday.
According to Siemens, the club's W6CX APRS digipeater was only recently moved to the north peak of Mount Diablo after vandals toppled the communications tower, which was the system's home on another peak known as Rocky Ridge. Not so lucky on Mount Diablo were several other repeaters housed in another container. According to AF6PU, salvaging anything from that site is unlikely.
They were actually closest to where the fire went into the vault or the trailer that it was in. And firefighters were able to get the fire out, but they had to break into the vault and spray water all over the equipment. So it appears to be a total loss. The efforts of the firefighters up there were incredible. I was watching them drive around with my binoculars from my home. I was monitoring their tactical channels, and I can tell you that they put themselves into positions that no normal person would put themselves in to try to save the communication towers that are on the north and south peak of Mount Diablo.
As California burns, Colorado is flooding. We'll have a full wrap-up of news from the Centennial State next week. A new $18 million emergency operations center in Williamson County, Texas, will provide a room for amateur radio operators.
Jared Thomas is the emergency management coordinator. He says that local amateur radio operators will also have a room in which to gather. He notes that natural disasters, such as a 1997 F5 tornado with winds in excess of 200 miles per hour, is in part the reason for the emergency operations center's existence. The new nerve center will be command central for major emergencies and also houses the county's 911 communications department, which had outgrown its home at the sheriff's office. A large conference center and separate room for media are also included at the EOC.
Some sad news in the Hamfest and convention scene. The annual March AES Superfest is no more. In an email posted to Chicago's NS9RC North Shore Amateur Radio Club remailer, Don Whitman, KK9H, says that he learned from AES employee Ray Grenier, K9KWH, that there would no longer be an AES Superfest held in Milwaukee. Grenier, who spoke to Whitman at the recent Radio Expo convention, reportedly mentioned several factors that led to the decision to abandon future Superfests. Among these are high prices for gasoline that's curtailed the number of Illinois residents that drive up to Wisconsin for the event. Also, there's been a drop in the number of commercial exhibitors willing to come up due to increased expenses and the difficulty in finding interesting speakers. But looking ahead to the Dayton Hamvention, Contest University 2014 is scheduled for May 15th at the Crown Plaza Hotel. According to the organizers, if you stayed at the Crown Plaza for the 2013 event, filled out a 2014 reservation form, and dropped it off at the registration desk, you should already have an email confirmation from the hotel for your 2014 reservation. And if not, and you'd like to reserve a room, you can contact the hotel directly. Use the code CON. The base room rate for Contest University is $139 per night. Hamvention 2014 runs from May 16th to the 18th with separate ancillary activities like Contest University taking place earlier in the week. And, of course, the Ham Nation crew will be there, and we're looking forward to seeing you there, too. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And there's your news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. Now let's turn to another great, great sponsor of Ham Nation. This is Lynda.com. There are a lot of rules of thumb in life, and here's one that you can pretty much take to the bank. The more you know, the more you can succeed, okay? And Lynda.com, that's Lynda.com, is an online learning company that will help anybody learn creative software business skills to achieve your personal and professional goals. With Lynda.com, a subscription, you can receive an unlimited access to a huge library of high-quality, current, and engaging video tutorials across a really wide variety of subjects. Like, for instance, if you want to learn how to make a video for Ham Nation, you can get on there and you can look at all kinds of video software, like iMovie, Windows Movie Maker, all kinds of stuff on there. Photography, videography, audio recording, songwriting. I got on there and looked at something for a piece of the software that we use at work and also that I use here to record the Amateur Radio Newsline audio pieces. So, and it's not just that. It's resume creation, time management. It's Excel, Photoshop, Dreamweaver. It's PowerPoint. It's QuickBooks. It's whatever it is you want to learn, it's on Lynda.com. And now, how is Lynda.com different from free or open source video tutorials? Well, there's over 2,000 courses, and they're adding new ones every day. The instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields, and they're expert teachers. They're high-quality video production from state-of-the-art studios. These aren't homemade videos you'll find from some 13-year-old gamer on YouTube. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but these are professionals, and it's done in a professional way. It's a curated course content as well. Every Lynda course is carefully structured so that you can learn from start to finish, or you can jump around specific chapters for quick answers, just like you can a textbook. The transcripts are all searchable. They allow you to search inside a video to save time and find exactly what you're looking for. You can bookmark and do playlists. It allows you to organize your courses into a customized learning path. All course levels are there. It's a wide variety of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies. Anything you want to learn is on Lynda.com. You can watch it from your computer, from your tablet, your iPhone, mobile devices. You switch back and forth and pick up where you left off. And it's one low monthly price of $25 a month that gives you access to the entire course library. For $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. That includes exercise files that allow you to follow along with the instructor's project using the exact same assets. For instance, if you're looking at something on an iMovie and you want to learn how to make the movie, if you're on the $37.50 a month plan, you have access to those movie files that you can download and put into your iMovie program and make the same thing that the instructor is making right there on your equipment. You set the pace, fast or slow as you want to go. With the mobile access, you can learn what you want and when you want. Now, here's what you do. You go to try Lynda.com right now. There's the free 7-day trial. Lynda.com/hamnation. That's Lynda.com/hamnation. You can access the entire library, over 2,000 courses, free for 7 days. Lynda.com/hamnation.
Ham Nation. And we thank Lynda.com for their wonderful support of Ham Nation. And let's go see what Dale has got going. You know, kind of like Lynda.com, where you can learn all kinds of stuff. Wayne Green was one of those kind of guys, I think. He probably would have fit right in with Lynda.com. This man knew a little bit about everything and wasn't afraid to tell you about it. Dale, I think you've got the piece of video that we made, huh?
Yeah, we sure do, Don. And I had asked Bob if I could do a little bit of a tribute, write one for Wayne also. And we did that, and then we'll roll your video here very shortly. Well, last Friday, September 13th, was a sad day for amateur radio. On that day, Wayne Green, W2NSD, became a silent key. Now, those of us who were amateur radio operators in the late 1950s and on into the 60s remember Wayne Green well. Most of us couldn't wait for our 73 magazine to arrive. When it finally came in the mail, many of us would immediately turn to the editorial page and read Wayne's column, Never Say Die. And for the younger viewers in the Ham Nation audience now, consider this. Wayne Green was one of the major advocates of the 2-meter amateur radio repeaters we take for granted today. But more importantly, it was the development of this concept that led to the cell phones that we can't live without today. Then again, in the early 1970s, many of us old timers followed Wayne right into the world of personal computers with Byte and Kilobod and other magazines Wayne published. We built our own computers and then applied them to our amateur radio activities. And speaking of PC, Wayne Green was rarely politically correct. Rather, he was a leader, someone who called it as he saw it, and a leader most of us followed throughout his outstanding publishing career. Well, to honor Wayne Green, Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, recorded a wonderful tribute. Ham Nation's own Don Wilbanks then used Bill's recording to produce this special video. Let's watch.
One of the people who truly changed the face of ham radio in both the 20th and 21st centuries has gone to his final reward. This with the sad news that Dr. Wayne S. Green II, W2NSD of Hancock, New Hampshire, died September 13th at the age of 91. Dr. Green was an outspoken figure during his many years writing about the hobby. His public career really began with a 5-year stint at CQ Magazine in the 1950s before founding 73 Magazine in late 1959. While at the helm of 73, he also used the title of El Supremo and founder of the magazine, which he published until 2003. Over the years, Dr. Green was known for many things. He traveled the world and did his best to introduce ham radio in developing nations. He was one of the earliest supporters of emerging modes such as RTTY, FM, and repeaters, and even started the first ham radio digital communications magazine. And as each new technology came along, there was W2NSD as its point man, urging all of us to embrace the same dreams that he had. Be it ham radio, personal computing, the compact disc, or numerous other technologies, there was Wayne Green urging anyone who would listen to give it a try. But what Wayne Green, W2NSD, will likely be best remembered for was his editorials. He wrote over 1,000 of them, covering everything from giving his personal support to even the most mundane aspects of our hobby to alternate science, such as his belief in producing energy through cold fusion. The list of what he wrote goes on and on. It took a lifetime for him to write it, and for many of us, it took a good part of our lifetimes to read. And in the process, his zest for life and commitment to ham radio and technology changed both for the better. On his blog, Dr. Green left a short note for all of us. It was his final entry. Please permit me to read it to you as it sums up the life of the man as he saw himself. We quote, "The wall clock clicks out the seconds with so many yet ahead. I've ignored them. A battery keeps the clock going. I wonder how my own battery is doing. The one with the most toys wins. Awash in toys, I'll pass on what did I win. Now, what happens to all my toys? I leave books, records, tapes, and photos by the thousands. A lifetime archive, worthless to anyone but me. Pictures of family and friends, treasured books and music, the mileposts of my life. All will be headed for the trash heap. Like my father, my grandfather, and great-grandfather, I'll be another gravestone in the northern New Hampshire cemetery, and the world will carry on as if nothing had happened. I have no complaints. I've enjoyed the world and helped it a bit. What would I change if I could do my life over? Get me a thick pad, and I'll make you a list." To which we'll add, 73 Wayne, we'll see you once again on the other side of the great ethereal abyss. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, remembering the years gone by.
Wow. That was super duper.
Rest in peace, Wayne. You are definitely remembered by those of us who read every word that you printed back in the old days there. Let's move now to a video we produced just this past weekend with David Haygood. He's president of the Wichita Amateur Radio Club. David designs spectrum analyzers for a living, so we thought he'd be a great source of information about spectrum analyzers here for Ham Nation. We've already produced 3 short videos, and we have ideas for another 2 in mind. Tonight, we're going to stick with the most basic question, just what is a spectrum analyzer? David, go ahead.
Well, a couple of weeks ago on Ham Nation, George was talking about oscilloscopes, and he mentioned a thing called a spectrum analyzer. I'm David Haygood, N0YKG, and I thought I'd try to answer the question, well, what is a spectrum analyzer? A spectrum analyzer looks at a signal over frequency, not over time. I have 3 examples of spectrum analyzers right here, an RF spectrum analyzer, a baseband spectrum analyzer, and your SDR program is a spectrum analyzer. I said RF spectrum analyzer and baseband. What do I mean by that? It's what their kinds of signal they're trying to measure. An RF spectrum analyzer looks at radio signals. A baseband spectrum analyzer looks at audio signals. I've got my baseband spectrum analyzer here looking at the output of my RF spectrum analyzer, so I can see my demodulated audio here and see its spectrum. And then your spectrum analyzer in an SDR program, I've got QISC running over here, is nothing more than another spectrum analyzer. It also gives you another example of a different kind of display. We have the standard spectrum analyzer display, which shows amplitude of my frequency segments versus frequency. And then you have the waterfall, which is just nothing more than that line kind of flipped sideways. The further out, the further up, the brighter the line. So, RF spectrum analyzer, baseband spectrum analyzer, and standard and SDR analyzer. There's also 2 types of spectrum analyzer function, or how you actually measure the spectrum. There's an FFT-based spectrum analyzer, which uses a complicated mathematical algorithm called a fast Fourier transform, FFT. That's this guy, that's that guy. There's also what's the old school approach, a swept mixer, which is what this guy is. Each one breaks the spectrum down into its frequency segments and shows you again, amplitude versus frequency. Amplitude versus frequency. Amplitude versus frequency. We're going to do a couple more segments where I'm going to show a few more examples of exactly how to use a spectrum analyzer, and those will be coming up in future shows. Until then, I'm David Haygood, N0YKG, and I hope you enjoyed this.
Well, thanks, David. We look forward to next week. In that episode, Dave will pick up where George left off in episode 112. Dave will be showing you the same signals George was observing on an oscilloscope on a spectrum analyzer. Our final episode in the can will then show how to test an antenna diplexer with a spectrum analyzer. Well, we've got another club website of the week for you. Brian will bring up www.twocars.org. We'll take a quick look. It came to us from the Cuyahoga Amateur Radio Society. That's CARS. The club is located in the Cleveland, Ohio area. They run three repeaters and are active in many facets of ham radio, including public service. It's quite a colorful website, packed with information, and it's very easy to navigate. This week's club side of the week was nominated by Tom Wayne, WB8N. He's creator of the Ham Nation Fan at the club's field day, which was seen on our video segment in June. Thank you very much, Tom. If you have a nomination for the club side of the week, just send it to us at hamnationvideos.com, and we'll get them all on at one time or the other. We'll pick one each week and highlight it, and maybe we can get your club on the air. Well, the votes are in, and tonight we're happy to announce the first winner of the Ham's Choice Award. This award was created to honor hams who contribute videos for broadcast here on Ham Nation. Mark Breckheisen, KB0MOF of the Ham Radio Center in Derby, Kansas, sponsors the Ham's Choice Awards, and he'll be providing a prize for the top video each month. And this prize this month is the hardback edition of 50 years of amateur radio innovation. Before we announce the winner, though, we must, in the interest of full transparency, let you know that the most popular video was the Young Ham of the Year, which aired on August 21st. However, that one was produced by George Thomas, and it featured Don Wilbanks, both our Ham Nation hosts. Congratulations to you, Don. And well, since the competition was designed for Ham Nation viewers, the Ham Nation staff decided together today to make this video ineligible for the prize award. Starting with September's voting, which begins as soon as tonight's videos are posted at www.hamnationvideos.info, we will not list videos produced by any member of the Ham Nation team. With that said, the next most popular video and the first winner of the Ham's Choice Award and the 50 years of amateur innovation is Building a 6-Meter Yagi. That was produced by George Huffman, KD4MXA. Congratulations, George.
Yeah.
And we'll get, good choice.
What's that? And we'll get that book to you in the mail real quick this week. The runner-up position in the competition was a tie between Echolink QSO with Scott, KD0WBB. That was produced by Randy, K7AGE, and another video, K2BSA Jamboree 2013, produced by Jim Wilson, K5ND. Congratulations to both of you. We'll hope that you will go to hamnationvideos.info and vote for your favorite video that was aired during September. We'll present that award on October 16th. And thanks again to Mark, KB0MOF, for sponsoring the Ham's Choice Award. Remember, Ham Nation wants to show your videos. So please send the link to your video to hamnationvideos at twit.tv or click submit at www.hamnationvideos.info. Well, that wraps it up for the video segment 7-3 from the Yellow Brick Road. Cheryl, the Ham Nation stage is yours. So take it away.
Very good. Thanks, Dale. Hi, everyone in the chat room and on and also in the podcast. Let's take it away here with some questions for you. First, one little quick announcement for N9GQR. Frank, he says he wanted me to plug The Peoria Superfest in Illinois this weekend. Saturday is a must-attend, he says. So that is something you want to check out. Just put in Google Superfest Peoria, Illinois, and you'll come up with it. It's been there for many, many years, so please stop by. Now we do have a question here. This one's for you, George, and that comes from KC0OUZ Adam. He says he needed to eliminate some alternator noise on his new IC7100 mobile rig, and he wanted to know if he should put a ferrite choke in line, and if so, where can he find one for 10-gauge wire, George? Would you have an answer for Adam tonight? Go ahead.
I don't know that you would find one for big enough for 10-gauge wire. Well, you probably could, but you really don't have to use ferrite. I don't remember the episode number right off, but in a recent Ham Nation, I showed an alternator filter that I built for my rig in the mobile, and it really worked.
Oh, very good, very good. I know there was something that was called firecrackers that David used to install under the hood for some of the cars that I had with mobiles in them. I'm not sure exactly what brand that is, but corneal doubler, he says in the background here for you. So those are some possibilities. So I have one for you, Bob. How are you tonight? And here it comes. It is about the ICOM 718, and he says, what are the gain settings you might suggest for your ProSet IC and the ICOM 718? Is there some internal settings, or what do you suggest, Bob, to you? Go ahead.
Well, it's the 718 is a great radio. It's very simple. That's why I like it. It's not a lot of things to mess with. You set microphone gain with one way, no matter what kind of radio it is. I wish that they would all follow what Yaesu did. They took my lead when I was helping to put the 9000 together and the parametric EQ. If you will notice on that radio, there is no ALC meter. It says mic gain. That's exactly what an ALC meter is how to set mic gain. You want to set your microphone gain so you just see that meter flicker. No, it's not laying in the red all the time. It's just flickering on peaks. Automatic limiting circuit. ALC. That's how you set mic gain. And on the 718, you don't have equalization. You don't have bandwidth filters. You just set the mic gain. And away you go. It's a wonderful little radio. Our ICM microphone is choice on that radio. But that's how you do it. ALC meter is your mic gain meter. Case closed. Works great.
Super. Thanks, Bob. And for question number three, we have one for Gordo here. Here we are. Gordo, I hope your ears are on. Do high-intensity plant-growing lights, this came in from a letter, by the way, to the Ham Nation office, so it wasn't chat room, but good enough for a nice question for you. Do high-intensity plant-growing lights emit broadband noise on high frequency? I have a neighbor down the street whose entire house reeks of broadband noise when I drive by on 40 meters. Should I knock on the door to solve the noise problem? Over to you, Gordo.
I can imagine the house is reeking. Well, for your horticulture homegrown neighbor's operation, the high-power LED clusters, those with colorful LEDs, indeed radiate broadband noise. In fact, switcher power supplies, part of the high-power LED clusters, radiate for three or four houses away. No, I don't think I would be knocking on their door. Probably soon you'll see public safety officials knocking on their door and closing down their high-powered LEDs. But I hate to say that this is a huge problem, especially now up in Colorado, as well as in Washington, where there's a lot of high-powered LEDs. So no easy cure other than to hope that their horticulture, homegrown noisemakers will soon go away.
Well, thank you very much, Gordo, and you have a pleasant evening. Thanks for your answers, everyone that participated. We appreciate you coming into us. And anyhow, that'll wrap it up for tonight. But please stop by on 3847 for the After Show QSO. And until next time, this is K9BIK. Cheryl, you take care. Bye.
Hey, good job. That was great. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, we're just going to get in a quick ICOM ad here, but I saw you were holding something in your hand, Bob. What was that?
Yeah, I was going to tell you before you started. I have a new play toy.
I want one.
I see that.
I want one.
I want to tell you something, buddy. This is a game changer. It's just wonderful. You can just, it's like your iPhone. And I got to tell you, it's really slick. And that's it right there. That's all you got. I know there's a box under there and for the power supply. But it's going to change a lot of things. And I'm excited to get it in here and make it all happen. I worked a couple guys today on it. But 7100 is amazing. Just thought you'd like to know before you started talking about ICOM, George.
Yeah, well, I've got one here, Bob, sitting right on the bench next to me. I've been poking around on this afternoon. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to give that one away. So go over to AmateurLogic.tv and look at the ICOM contest that's going on there. We got some great prizes for the ultimate mobile rig there. But right now, let's take the official message from ICOM, and we'll come back and talk about another contest. Some great D-Star radios have entered the market in the last year, but let's not forget all the solid analog radios out there. From radios strictly on 2 meters to dual banders with analog capability, ICOM has your complete analog solutions this fall. Check out ICOM's compact military rugged 2-meter IC23H mobile, 65 watts of stable output. Oversized tuning dial is easy to use. It's got 4.5 watts of loud audio and 270 memory channels and multiple scan options. Consider the ICV8000 for your next mobile adventure on 2 meters, 75 watts of output power, a rugged die-cast aluminum chassis, and fast memory scanning with dynamic memory scan. ICOM's IC7000 is an all-mode HF, VHF, UHF mobile. It's a compact radio with a colorful high-res display, dedicated interface keys, and great tuning knob, built-in DSP noise reduction and filtering, and it's popular for de-expeditions and field days as well. Looking for rugged, easy-to-use handhelds with plenty of memory channels, loud audio, and long-lasting battery life? The ICV80 and the V80HD is a 2-meter handheld with 5.5 watts of high power. A built-in BTL amplifier helps deliver 750 milliwatts of loud audio. It's great for noisy environments. There's 207 memory channels, and the HD version includes radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and a rabbit charger for up to 19 hours of operation. The ICT70AHD is a dual-band transceiver for classic operation on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Like the V80HD, this version includes the radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and the rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. It's easy to program with a simple keypad, large backlit alphanumeric display, and it has 700 milliwatts of loud and clear audio, 302 memory channels, and fast scanning features. Why not take a look today? Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection. And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Register each week, and you could possibly win some swag that's given away weekly. And you'll also automatically be entered in our monthly contest to win an ICOM radio. This month's prize is going to be the ICV8000. It's a 75-watt rig. It gives you enough power for the ultimate 2-meter mobile ham station. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after the show tonight and after each episode of Ham Nation and throw your name in the hat.
I can certainly say that the ICOM T70 is what we're going to be using this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and a little bit of Sunday for a public safety event we're working. And this radio has loud audio. So, George, let me turn it back to you, and I'm going to let you probably tie the ribbons if Bob faded away there for a moment. And we will be tuning in tonight with the ICOM 9100. Looks like 7278. And, George, what do you have for some additional frequencies on 75? Go ahead, George.
Well, you also want to join Cheryl at 3847 kilohertz, and she'll be doing a little wrap-up after the show tonight. And you can join us on EchoLink at star, do drop in star, or you can join us on D-Star at Reflector 14 Module C. Well, Gordo, I believe that does it for this week's Ham Nation. So until next week, we'll say 73, and join us back here next week at this same time.
I don't know.
73 from all of us at Ham Nation. And now, let's go live and on the air.
Okay, hello, everybody out there listening. This is Whiskey Tango 6 Hotel from the West Coast on 7278 kilohertz. Join us tonight on 40 meters.